presented by ExxonMobil.
Hey, good morning, Playbookers. I am Playbook Deputy Editor Zach Stanton. It is Wednesday, March 6th, and here's what's driving the day. On the surface, Super Tuesday was a romp for both Joe Biden and Donald Trump, who bulldozed through last night's primaries and caucuses, even if they each stopped short of a clean sweep. Dig in a little bit, though, and you'll find that there's also plenty for both campaigns to worry about that happened yesterday. For Trump, the good news is that he won all but one contest, losing only Vermont to Nikki Haley. Another reminder, in case one was needed, that this is Trump's party. But the bad news for him is that, one, he continued to underperform his strong polls, and two, a number of Haley voters said that they would never vote for Trump in the general election. Though, honestly, to what extent that's a function of Democrats crossing over to vote for Haley in the primary is a topic of some debate. For Biden, the good news is that he carried all but one state and territory up yesterday, and you could practically hear the champagne corks popping in Delaware when North Carolina Republicans selected as their gubernatorial nominee Lieutenant Governor Mark Robinson, who is a controversial figure with a history of incredibly inflammatory and offensive statements that are sure to be fodder for attack ads. Now, North Carolina is, per the Biden campaign, the Trump one state they feel most optimistic about flipping in 2024, and they see Mark Robinson as sort of the ideal Republican for them to run against. On the downside for Biden, he did lose one territory, that territory being American Samoa, to a man named Jason Palmer. Now, if your response to hearing that name is to ask, "Who?" then please know you're in good company. Even those of us political obsessives in the Playbook team group chat were sort of scratching our heads over who this guy is. Now, let's be clear, there's no indication that as Samoa goes, so goes the nation. But that Biden could lose to such a no-name candidate, and in so doing, lose out on the neat narrative about winning every single Democratic contest, is likely to provide further fodder for pundits who argue that something like malaise has overtaken the Democratic Party as it looks ahead to Biden's re-election. Arguably, though, much more troubling news for Biden yesterday came from a state that wasn't holding a primary, that being Nevada. RFK Jr., the independent candidate with one of the most valuable family names in American politics, announced last night that his campaign has collected enough signatures to qualify for the general election ballot in Nevada. As a reminder, Biden beat Trump in the state by just 33,000 votes in 2020. And it seems quite plausible that RFK Jr. on the ballot could well tip the balance of the state to Trump. All of that having been said, some of the biggest Super Tuesday action centered not on Biden or Trump, but on races down the ballot. In California, it's the story of Adam and Steve, that is, Adam Schiff and Steve Garvey, who are headed to the general election for the open Senate seat formerly belonging to Dianne Feinstein. Schiff, of course, is a Democratic congressman from Burbank. Garvey is best known for his legendary pitching career with the LA Dodgers and later the San Diego Padres. And they appear to have edged out Democratic Congresswomen Katie Porter and Barbara Lee, both of whom were vying for a spot on the November ballot, only to have their ambitions quashed by Schiff, who savvily used his ads to boost Garvey's profile and his appeal among Trump Republicans, blocking out the two Democrats who could have posed a far greater threat to Schiff in the general election. In Texas, longtime incumbent Congresswoman Sheila Jackson Lee fended off a challenge from fellow Democrat, former Houston Councilwoman, and her former intern, Amanda Edwards. Congressman Colin Allred won the Democratic primary to take on Senator Ted Cruz in November, and in a host of state legislative races, more establishment and center-right Republicans were locked in competitive primaries with challengers from the far right, and in some instances, as with the challenge to the Speaker of the State House, they appear to be headed to runoffs. There are so many more races you should know about, and so little time to discuss them, so be sure to check out politico.com for full results and analysis. Meanwhile, on Capitol Hill, much of the attention is focused not so much on the campaign trail, but on someone who will be absent from it this fall, Kyrsten Sinema, the colorful Arizona Independent, announced yesterday that she will not seek re-election to the chamber. Joining me now to discuss that is Politico's Deputy Managing Editor for Congress, the indefatigable Ilana Shore. Good morning, Ilana.
How are you guys?
Glad to have you. So, Kyrsten Sinema announced yesterday that she's not going to seek re-election, which is not exactly a surprise, but it is a decision with potentially big implications. What drove her to opt out of running for office again?
Well, as Congress watchers know well, Sinema left the Democratic Party about a little more than a year ago. And she was essentially run out of it to a great extent by a growing progressive movement that was pushing Ruben Gallego, who is now the undisputed Democratic pick for the race this fall. Progressives didn't like Sinema for a number of reasons. I mean, unlike Joe Manchin, who represented a red state where Democrats had almost no chance of winning, a lot of people on the left felt like Sinema was squandering the chance to help move a purple state more blue and take a more progressive stance, which, by the way, as somebody who covered her race in 2018, she sounded quite a bit more progressive when she ran. Then when she got there, she ended up being closer, frankly, with Republicans on a personal level than Democrats. I mean, she just had more buddies across the aisle, particularly Mitt Romney, who is now retiring. And if you ask Sinema, you know, she changed for good reasons, became more of an old line traditional senator who was willing to cross the aisle and get things done. She played a huge role in the infrastructure deal that passed last fall. She worked on gun safety legislation, and she obviously was a champion of the border deal that most recently imploded. She was at the center, arguably, of a lot of bipartisan action that advanced quite far. Sinema felt like, you know, this was a legitimate maturation as a legislator. The left disagreed, right? So that was kind of the landscape driving her first out of the Democratic caucus, although she continued to get committee assignments from that party, so technically counted as a pretty reliable Democratic vote, and then out of the Senate entirely.
So you mentioned her friendship with Mitt Romney. You know, between Romney not running for re-election, Joe Manchin not running for re-election, and now Kyrsten Sinema not running for re-election, it feels like there's a trend of sort of centrist or centrist-friendly senators who've decided to step down or step aside rather than run again this year. Is there some sort of big picture takeaway there about what that portends for the future of the Senate?
I mean, well, keep in mind, this is a trend that's arguably been continuing. You saw Rob Portman and Pat Toomey, who was like no centrist in a lot of ways. But think about it. The Manchin-Toomey gun control deal was the last major huge gun control vote we had. And his name was on that. Right. So pretty much anyone who is interested in even occasionally having a good cross aisle conversation has been talked about potentially leaving. I mean, Susan Collins and Lisa Murkowski are you know, the last vestiges of this, arguably, aside from Romney on the GOP side of the aisle, and they're not going anywhere. But Trump has gone after both of them. So if Trump returns to the White House, who knows what kind of pressure they'll face to also exit. All of which is to say, yes, you know, these three, this Congress, are a trend, but they're a trend continuing as the Senate arguably looks more like the House, a pretty majoritarian and bitterly partisan institution.
Definitely. And you know, one of the things that historically has made the Senate different from the House is its unique legislative maneuvers like the filibuster, which Kyrsten Sinema was instrumental in protecting, sort of a bulwark against the elimination of it, which was otherwise supported by almost the entire Democratic caucus. So is this filibuster at risk now in the coming years, do you think?
I would say absolutely it's more at risk than ever, but that's as much because of the exit of Mitch McConnell from the top spot as it is because of the retirement of these two, frankly. I think, you know, Trump has wanted to get rid of the legislative filibuster for a while. So the idea that on the GOP side of the aisle, you see Trump now as the pretty much undisputed party leader with McConnell, you know, stepping to the side, says pretty poor things about the GOP's approach to the filibuster if they take both houses of Congress. And then, you know, as you observe, the same goes for Democrats who are literally just short these two now retiring members' votes to make their own changes. That said, I mean, the devil's advocate argument about the filibuster, I suppose you would say, is that There, much like there were people who didn't want to tell pollsters in 2016 that they would vote for Donald Trump because they were a little ashamed, I think there are a lot of senators who voted for that Democratic proposal to alter the filibuster, knowing that Manchin and Sinema would bail them out. You know what I mean? So we will see, obviously, the dwindling center of both parties, how they really feel about the filibuster. If one party takes unified control of government next year, that's really the shot you have.
Well, Alana, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
And for your schedule today, the Senate and the House are both in. And at the White House, President Biden will be working on the State of the Union speech. I'm Zach Stanton. Thanks for listening. And though Super Tuesday is done, I do hope you'll have a Super Wednesday.
The world needs ways to reduce carbon emissions. We're working on solutions in our own operations, like carbon capture and clean energy from hydrogen. So who are we? Believe it or not, ExxonMobil. And our solutions could help industries like manufacturing, commercial transportation, and power generation too. Heavy industry with low emissions. Let's deliver. Learn more at ExxonMobil.com.